You're listening to This Week in Palestine, a program rooted in truth-telling and solidarity, where stories from the ground meet global perspectives on justice, dignity, and liberation. Each week, we bring you in-depth reporting, bold analysis, and unfiltered commentary that centers Palestinian voices while drawing connections to international resistance. From policy and power to media narratives and everyday struggle, we explore the forces that shape life under occupation and how they intersect with movements for justice around the world. Please note, the views and opinions shared in the next hour are those of our hosts and guests, and do not necessarily represent WZBC, Boston College, or its Board of Trustees. This isn't a space for diluted dialogue, it's a platform for courageous truth. Thank you for joining us on the journey. You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio. Good morning, good evening, wherever you are around the world. I'm your host, Muhammad Al-Ghul, and it's a privilege to welcome you back to This Week in Palestine. Today is Sunday, July 20th, 2025. And once again, our hearts and focus return to Gaza and the West Bank lands scarred by siege and silenced by global indifference. Though headlines fade and attention shifts, the suffering remains relentless. Families continue to face displacement, communities resist with courage, and the pursuit of dignity carries on through unimaginable odds. And still, the question echoes, how long must a people endure before the watching world moves from witness to action? Stay with us as we uncover truth, uplift resilience, and keep the flame of justice burning. Last week, we explored the vital practice of boycotting companies that support or profit from Israel's actions, and we recommended several apps to help identify the products linked to that complicity. But the truth is stark. The web of corporate involvement runs deep. We're talking about hundreds of companies and tens of thousands of products, spanning everything from technology and food to fashion and finance. Breaking free from this system isn't easy. It demands real commitment and a willingness to rethink everyday choices. But refusing to fuel genocide through our purchases is a powerful step toward justice, and every action counts. The brutal truth is that dozens of multinational corporations are profiting directly from the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza, what United Nations Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese calls an economy of genocide. Defense giants like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, RTX Raytheon, and General Dynamics have seen surging stock prices as they supply the fighter jets, guided bombs, and artillery used in Israel's military campaign. Tech firms including Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and Palantir provide cloud platforms and AI targeting systems like Project Nimbus and predictive kill list algorithms that enable mass surveillance and automated warfare. Construction companies such as Caterpillar, Volvo, and Hyundai supply bulldozers and machinery used in demolitions of Palestinian homes, while Booking.com and Airbnb monetize stolen land through illegal Israeli settlement listings. Financial institutions like BlackRock and Vanguard deepen global complicity by investing heavily in these firms, while agricultural and energy providers such as Orbia, Netafim, Glencore, and Drummond sustain settlement expansion and military operations. This corporate network actively benefits from occupation and siege conditions, using Gaza as a testing ground for technologies and tactics that are later deployed globally. Since the war began, the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange has surged over 200%, adding billions in market value, underscoring the profit motive behind continued aggression. As Albanese warns, these corporations are not passive actors. They are legally complicit and must face sanctions, arms embargoes, and reparations demands. Until sustained global pressure is applied, this machinery of profit and impunity will continue to turn devastation into business. Today's episode brings you powerful, uncompromising truth from two voices on the front lines of global accountability. First, we'll hear from Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories, who has courageously exposed what she calls the economy of genocide, a shadow system where multinational corporations, tech firms, arms manufacturers, and financial institutions profit from Israel's brutal campaign in Gaza. Albanese's report outlines how this corporate web is deeply entangled in the machinery of occupation and apartheid, turning destruction and displacement into a lucrative business model. Her findings call for sanctions, arms embargoes, and reparations, framing genocide not just as a humanitarian crisis, but as a global enterprise fueled by complicity. Following that, we turn to Ben Norton, editor of Geopolitical Economy Report, whose in-depth journalism shines a light on a long overdue shift in mainstream discourse. Norton chronicles how, for the first time, major media outlets and international bodies have begun to acknowledge that Israel's actions in Gaza meet the legal definition of genocide. His reporting highlights how mounting evidence, expert testimony, and global outrage have forced even traditionally pro-Israel institutions to confront the scale and intent of Israel's military campaign. From the ICJ's preliminary findings to shifts in language across outlets like The Guardian and BBC, Norton illustrates a moment of reckoning in global media. Together, these voices frame today's truth: genocide is being committed, profit is driving it, and silence is no longer tenable. Let's listen carefully and let this knowledge fuel our action.
An economy of occupation just turned into an economy of genocide. The Tel Aviv Stock Exchange has increased its value 179%, 70 billion in the last month alone. Why? Arms manufacturers and security/surveillance system has been profiteering a lot through the customization of weaponry and how Israel has perfected certain techniques of surveillance or hitting, killing Palestinians throughout this genocidal war. Palestine has always been a laboratory for Israel, and Israel must be understood as a military state. In order to preserve itself as an ethno state, it has had to rely significantly on the use of force, on military force. And the Palestinians have provided an endless pool of resources on which to test surveillance techniques, technology, and other kinds of weapons with zero accountability, zero scrutiny, and a lot of return. One people enriched and another erased. Israel's economy is a business of erasure, of elimination. 60,000 people have been killed. Over 100,000 have been maimed. One third of the killed ones are children. The harm that has been done to the Palestinians is enormous and can hardly be met by justice. However, there is something absolutely abominable in the way this genocide has been committed. This is a genocide that has been enforced through weaponry, technology, and surveillance systems of the 21st century. If I look back right now, after 3 years of this mandate as a special rapporteur, I see a continuum in various pieces of work that I've done. Israel has violated the right of self-determination of the Palestinians, like the rights to exist on the little land that remains to them, politically, culturally, economically. It has strangled the possibility for them to have an economy by controlling their resources, land, water, fuel, gas, and diverting them and the profits that others could make out of them toward itself. And this is why I insist today we need to stop feeding this illusion that there is a good Israel and a bad Israel, a good Israel with whom it's okay to do business, while if you cross the green line and you get into the colonies, then it becomes problematic. No, it's Israel which commits violations of the right of self-determination, which maintains an unlawful occupation, which advances annexation, and therefore it's Israel which today must face sanctions, divestment, and based on what civil society is increasingly and successfully doing, boycotts. The report exposes an economy of occupation which has turned into an economy of genocide. For decades, Israel has advanced its settler colonial project, enabled, facilitated, supported by a network of private entities, which range from the arms sector, Elbit system, Lockheed Martin, surveillance sector, Palantir, whose tools, techniques, and equipment have been used to forcibly displace the Palestinians from their lands, to destroy their lands and livelihoods, their homes, and then to segregate and surveil them with walls, fences, CCTV cameras, etc. And then They have been replaced. So they have been displaced and replaced. And in a way in which the private sector has proven instrumental in creating a new habitat, a new ecosystem made of homes, services, infrastructures, where Israeli Jews and others and their partners, their associates, have replaced the Palestinians. Think of the construction of the colonies, roads, water and electricity infrastructure, extracting Palestinian natural resources, and then producing goods and services and circulating them, connecting to a domestic, regional, and international sets of markets. If Palestine was a crime scene, it would have the fingerprints of all of us. So, for example, Airbnb and Booking.com advertise properties on land that settlers and the State of Israel have stolen from the Palestinians. We continue to normalize the occupation through a click. And this is not even the end of the story, because there has been a network, a web of enablers made of banks like BNP or Barclay, financial entities like BlackRock and Vanguard, and even universities, which have lended legitimacy and financial means, funds, endowments to the system to thrive, so that Israel could continue business as usual. It is displacement and replacement of the Palestinians in a vicious circle. Now, I could have written this report decades ago. And still, what has happened now is that instead of disengaging from this economy of occupation, which is unlawful, and we need to understand the legal framework there, because it implies responsibility and possibly liability of companies and their executives, is that instead of disengaging, these companies have maintained their entwinement with this economy and have even profited more. Hyundai has been providing machinery that has been used to demolish Palestinian infrastructure in the West Bank. And now that machinery is being used to pulverize Gaza. Same with Volvo. Volvo has been providing buses used to connect colonies and the colonies to Israel. Or think of the weaponry that has been enhanced and rendered more sophisticated through the support of artificial intelligence and other technologies in order to become more lethal at a reduced cost of life for the Israelis, like unmanned technologies, quadcopters, killing drones. So all this has generated an incredible economy, very high profits. But also think of the water industry or the dairy industry that should have complained for losing the market that Gaza represented, right? No, they've not made a peep, because there's ideologically they support what the State of Israel is doing. And universities have not disentangled from partnership with Israeli universities or with the Israeli defense sector and other forms of research in the name of neutrality. But there is nothing neutral, nothing innocent in engaging with a state which commits and is accused of committing war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. So this is the red line that companies have continued to cross with knowledge, intent, and purpose. And so this is why I say these people have no realization, no sense of what has been going on in Gaza. I mean, the harm that has been done in Gaza, or if they do, they support it. And this is why I say they must be held accountable. And of course, the companies can say, well, but what can I do? It's Israel making the use it wants of our goods. Yes, but you are enabling it. You are profiting from an unlawful endeavor. The fact of being directly linked to this economy and meshes you in an economy of occupation. And if you are not held accountable in courts, well, you will have faced accountability through the choice of your consumers. The strength of this report is in how it explains and exposes a system of entanglement and complicity of private actors with an unlawful endeavor. The International Court of Justice says that the occupation is unlawful. It should be withdrawn totally and unconditionally. And so the question is, how can ever be envisaged that the private sector can do what is prohibited to states, like recognizing the legal consequences of an unlawful act, which is criminal, and trading, aiding and abetting, supporting this unlawful endeavor? This is why I say the only legal legal move that companies can make is unplugging, just pulling out of their entanglement with Israel. Private entities are allowed to get away with their violations of international law because this is what they've always done. Historically, private entities have been enablers and drivers of settler colonial enterprises, dispossession, dismemberment, and subjugation of entire nations. Indigenous peoples bear like living testament of this. Palestinians are the last to be genocided in the pursuit of profit. However, as the post-Holocaust industrialist trials marked the end of an era of full lack of accountability, and South Africa post-apartheid has advanced the development of a normative framework to regulate the conduct of business. This is the test. Palestine is forcing us to take the opportunity to test that legal framework and to make sure that whatever businesses have done until now, meaning pursuing profits without zero accountability and zero scrutiny, changes once and for all. People who are enriching themselves out of this catastrophe have to be looked for everywhere they are and held accountable. The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is a slap in the face of 80 years of multilateralism and humanitarian assistance. Whatever they're doing is not aid. It's a shame to call it aid. How come that the state that is accused of committing acts of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity against the Palestinians, including using starvation as a weapon of war, is the state that is allowed to distribute food to the Palestinians? All the more, whatever that thing, the so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is, it looks more like a joint criminal enterprise with zero accountability, zero scrutiny, but especially zero purpose. Because, first of all, aid is a complex endeavor. It's not just throwing bags of flour at people. There are reports that refer to the presence of pills that appear to be narcotics in the flour, but also the way the flour is distributed. It's a punch in the face of the principle of dignity, humanity, no doing no harm. And it's absolutely undignified. The only recommendation I have, and I urge member states to do that, break the blockade yourself. Every state which has ports in the Mediterranean area, European states and Arab states must send their navy with humanitarian personnel and humanitarian supplies for the people of Gaza. Enough of them starving, being killed, tormented day and night. This nightmare must end. For the Palestinians, for the Israelis, and for what remains of our humanity. A ceasefire is not the answer, especially according to the Israeli way of observing ceasefires, where others see Israel fires. This is how ceasefires are normally implemented. This is not about ceasefire. The paradigm needs to shift from self-defense, whatever it is, to self-determination. I'm really worried also about how member states, from Arab states to Western states, are discussing the reconstructions of Gaza. This is not a business. We need to recover a population which is surviving genocide, and we need to heal them. We will also need to take care and heal the Israelis who have committed this genocide, because this is a society that, when it will realize what it has done, will face a moral collapse, but they will also have to face accountability for what they have done. Look, there is no other way to stop the genocide than stopping it. The genocide will, and the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from what remains of Palestine, will not stop by inertia. It must be stopped, and international law has in itself the roadmap to end it. End the genocide now. End the occupation by September this year, because this is what the General Assembly, upon the advisory opinion of the International Court of Justice, has decided, and then end apartheid. Whatever political solutions Palestinians and Israelis will decide, it cannot be anything else than full rights and freedoms for anyone, regardless of their religious or political cultural identity, between the river and the sea. Meanwhile, private and public actors, from government officials to CEOs of companies, have to be held accountable. The role that civil society, lawyers, private sectors, and anyone as a consumer or as part of a public or private institution can play is enormous. Use your role to bring accountability forward. We do build change at every step, and this is the moment to prove it. May this be the last genocide in human history, and may this be the last crime that is committed against the Palestinians. Look, I have one regret, not to have investigated media as the first corporate entity which should be held accountable, but it's coming. So thank you, independent media, to do what corporate media has not been able to do, telling the truth.
You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio.
The U.S. media has played a key role in whitewashing the horrifying crimes committed by Israel against the Palestinian people in Gaza, with the full support of the U.S. government under both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Yet those crimes have become so blatant and so impossible to deny that slowly the U.S. media is having to admit what is actually happening. The leading U.S. newspaper, The New York Times, has been one of the leading media outlets spreading nonstop propaganda in support of Israel, denying and whitewashing the crimes it committed against the Palestinian people. And yet, this July, after nearly 2 years of Israel's U.S.-sponsored genocide in Gaza, The New York Times finally published an article admitting that what Israel is doing is indeed a genocide sponsored by the U.S. government. And this was an article published by an Israeli scholar who served in the Israeli military, the IDF, and he's a world-renowned expert on genocide. He wrote, quote, "My inescapable conclusion has become that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people. Having grown up in a Zionist home, lived the first half of my life in Israel, served in the IDF as a soldier and officer, and spent most of my career researching and writing on war crimes and the Holocaust. This was a painful conclusion to reach, and one that I resisted as long as I could. But I have been teaching classes on genocide for a quarter of a century. I can recognize one when I see one." End quote. Those were the words of Omer Bar-Tov, who is an Israeli scholar born and educated in Israel. And today he is a professor of Holocaust and Genocide Studies at Brown University, an elite Ivy League school in the U.S. And in this article that he wrote in the New York Times, he explained how he came to this inescapable conclusion that Israel is carrying out a U.S.-sponsored genocide against the Palestinian people. He noted that when Palestinians attacked the Israeli colonial regime in October of 2023, after Israel had carried out an illegal criminal blockade of Gaza for more than a decade, and of course all of that context has been erased, but when Palestinians attacked the Israeli occupiers in October 2023, this scholar, Omer Bar-Tov, initially said that it was not a genocide, although he acknowledged that Israel carried out war crimes and potentially crimes against humanity. However, he acknowledged that as Israel continued to carry out this genocide after October 2023, he noted that in May 2024, the IDF ethnically cleansed 1 million Palestinians who were sheltered in Rafah in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. And then the Israeli regime completely destroyed Rafah. And he wrote, quote, "At that point, it appeared no longer possible to deny that the pattern of IDF operations was consistent with the statements denoting genocidal intent made by Israeli leaders in the days after the Palestinian attack in October of 2023. Going on in this article, this Israeli scholar noted that Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu urged Israelis to remember Amalek, which is a reference to a biblical passage in which God tells the Israelites to, quote, "kill alike men and women, infants and sucklings," end quote, which again is genocide, complete annihilation. Then Israeli regime officials said they were fighting, quote, "human animals," end quote, so demonizing Palestinians as animals. And then Israeli officials called for, quote, total annihilation, end quote. And the deputy speaker of Israel's parliament, Nissim Vaturi, said that Israel's task must be, quote, erasing the Gaza Strip from the face of the earth, end quote. This Israeli scholar then went on and he said, quote, those engaged in the worldwide culture of commemoration and remembrance built around the Holocaust will have to confront a moral reckoning. The wider community of genocide scholars is now edging ever closer toward a consensus over describing events in Gaza as a genocide. In November, a little more than a year into the war, the Israeli genocide scholar Shmuel Lederman joined in the growing chorus of opinion that Israel was engaged in genocidal actions. The Canadian international lawyer William Shabas came to the same conclusion last year and has recently described Israel's military campaign in Gaza as absolutely a genocide, end quote. Now, I have to say it is incredible seeing this in the New York Times, considering that the Times has been one of the leading propagandists in support of the genocidal Israeli regime, and the New York Times itself is directly complicit in these U.S.-sponsored crimes committed against the Palestinian people for years. This did not start in October 2023. And as recently as a few weeks ago, in June, the New York Times was still publishing articles praising Israel as a hero. The New York Times employs the extreme pro-war neoconservative columnist Brett Stevens, who's paid a very fat salary and has become very rich vomiting out propaganda in support of the U.S. empire and the Israeli colonial regime. In June, when the U.S. and Israel were waging war on Iran, he published an article titled, Israel Had the Courage to Do What Needed to Be Done, end quote. So this is the kind of nonsensical propaganda that the New York Times just churns out on a daily basis. And never forget how the New York Times has played a key role in printing U.S. government lies to justify illegal U.S. wars of aggression. Like, for instance, in the lead up to the criminal U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, the New York Times published many stories falsely claiming that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, WMDs, based on lies fabricated by the CIA and other U.S. government agencies that were obediently reprinted by the New York Times. And yet this leading U.S. newspaper never faced any consequences over its role in justifying, in being a party to, these illegal U.S. wars of aggression that blatantly violated international law. More than a million Iraqis died in this criminal U.S. war. The New York Times was a party to that war, just like how the New York Times is complicit and is a party to the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza. It has printed so much propaganda. And for instance, in October 2024, it printed another propaganda column by the pro-war extremist Brett Stevens titled, We Should Want Israel to Win, in which he cheered on Israel's genocide in Gaza. And yet here we are now in July of 2025, and the New York Times can no longer deny that the US and Israel have been carrying out a genocide against the Palestinian people. And now the newspaper wants to act as though it's been on the side of justice the entire time, when in fact, the U.S. media has been directly complicit in these crimes against humanity. And the same cynical thing is happening now in Europe, because European countries have played a key role in sponsoring Israel's genocide as well, especially Germany, which carried out one of the worst genocides in human history and is basically always on the wrong side of history and continues to support another genocide today. And also the UK and France and many other European countries. And yet now, the former top EU diplomat, Josep Borrell, who until just a few months ago was the de facto foreign minister of the European Union, now after leaving his position as the most powerful EU diplomat where he could have actually done something, now he admits that Israel is carrying out genocide in Gaza. These were the comments made by Josep Borrell, the former European Union foreign policy chief. Quote, we're facing the largest ethnic cleansing operation since the end of the Second World War, that is the Nazi Holocaust, in order to create a splendid holiday destination in Gaza. Once the millions of tons of rubble have been cleared from Gaza and the Palestinians have died or gone away, end quote. He also noted that the Israeli colonial regime is starving millions of Palestinians in Gaza, civilians, as a weapon of war, which is another genocidal crime against humanity. However, again, let's not forget that when Borrell actually had power, when he was the top EU diplomat, he facilitated Israel's genocide. He was complicit in these crimes, like the New York Times.
Yes, Europe is a garden. We have built a garden. The rest of the world, most of the rest of the world, is a jungle. And the jungle could invade the garden.
But what's clearly happening is that these US-sponsored Israeli crimes have become so blatant and so undeniable that many public officials are recognizing, wow, we need to call this out. So in a few years, if there ever is justice, like there were the Nuremberg trials against the Nazis, if there is justice, these figures are saying, we need to make sure that we're on record speaking out against this genocide after for nearly 2 years, we helped to facilitate it. This is even happening inside the Israeli regime itself. A former Israeli prime minister, Ehud Olmert, who is himself a war criminal, who carried out horrific crimes against the Palestinian people. This did not start in 2023. This goes back to the Nakba, the ethnic cleansing, the original genocide against the Palestinian people upon which Israel was founded in 1948. And it goes back to 1967, when Israel illegally occupied the territory of multiple Arab countries, including Syria, the Golan Heights, which is still occupied by Israel to this day, and including the Sinai Peninsula, which is part of Egypt. And ever since then, for nearly 60 years, Israel has maintained its illegal occupation of Palestinian territory and Syrian territory in violation of international law, and the U.S. government has strongly supported it as an outpost of the U.S. empire, as an unsinkable aircraft carrier for the U.S. empire in this very strategic region. But today, as Israel is just carrying out a blatant genocide, it's being live streamed in broad daylight, it's become impossible to deny. So now some top Western officials, including Israeli regime officials, are saying, okay, this is a genocide, we need to speak out. This former Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, admitted that Israel, with U.S. support, is building a, quote, concentration camp, end quote. This is the so-called humanitarian city, which is just so diabolically cynical. The U.S. and Israel have created this scheme involving the Boston Consulting Group. You know, these millionaires in fancy suits sitting in air-conditioned offices in the United States. They're making these plans to carry out genocide and ethnic cleansing and build concentration camps, and yet they call it a humanitarian city. And this former Israeli prime minister admitted that it's a concentration camp, and it's, quote, part of an ethnic cleansing, end quote. And I have to stress, it is so important to understand that none of this would be possible without the unflinching support of the U.S. government. Israeli media outlets, like the top Israeli newspaper, Haaretz, have published reports admitting, citing top Israeli military officials, that Israel could not carry out this genocide without the political and diplomatic support of the U.S. government, and most importantly, without the weapons and ammunition provided by the U.S. government. It would be impossible. And yet the U.S. government continues to flood Israel with billions of dollars of weapons and ammunition, including Trump himself. Soon after returning to the White House for his second term as president, he claimed he would be a peace president, but he bypassed the Congress in order to send $8 billion more worth of weapons to Israel to help it carry out this genocide. And of course, let's be very clear here. This is not just Trump and the Republicans. It's also Joe Biden and the Democrats, because this genocide started under Biden. And Biden gave Israel nearly $20 billion worth of so-called military aid. And even that term is very misleading, because it's not actually aid. This is money that goes to U.S. private corporations, military contractors as part of the military-industrial complex, like Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and Boeing. These huge corporations, they get the contracts from the U.S. government, these tens of billions of dollars. They create the weapons. It is private U.S. corporations that profit from this. It is investors in these U.S. corporations, many of which are listed in the S&P 500 and other major stock market indices on Wall Street. So they're all profiting from this genocide. And this is all extremely well documented. No one can say they didn't know. In fact, the United Nations published a very detailed report showing how US corporations have been directly complicit in and profiting from Israel's genocide in Gaza. This United Nations report was published in July. It is titled From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide. And it named some of the US corporations that are complicit in this genocide and how they've profited. And these include the biggest big tech corporations in Silicon Valley, including Google, whose parent company is Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft. By the way, these are the corporations that have been driving investor returns in the S&P 500. They're part of the so-called Magnificent Seven, the Mag Seven, these big tech corporations that have been responsible for a huge part of the gains in the S&P 500 and in the NASDAQ stock market indices in recent years. And Wall Street investors have become extremely rich profiting off of all of this. But it's not just them. Another major US corporation that has been complicit in Israel's genocide in Gaza is Palantir. Palantir was founded by the far-right Silicon Valley billionaire oligarch Peter Thiel, who is a major supporter of Donald Trump, and he previously employed the US Vice President J.D. Vance. And the Trump administration has contracted Palantir to spy on Americans, to compile a massive Big Brother-style database based on mass surveillance of US citizens. And by the way, the billionaire CEO of Palantir, Alex Karp, who's a right-wing Trump supporter, he boasted that the US empire is preparing for a three-front war against China, Russia, and Iran. So that's just one of these Silicon Valley corporations that is profiting from Israel's genocide in Gaza. Another US corporation named in this UN report is HP, Hewlett-Packard, and IBM. And there are deep historical echoes for this because IBM was also profiting from the Nazi Holocaust. This has been very well documented. I'm reading here from The Guardian, the major British newspaper. Quote, IBM directly supplied the Nazis with technology which was used to help transport millions of people to their deaths in the concentration camps at Auschwitz and Treblinka, end quote. And here we are today, 80 years later, and the United Nations is detailing how IBM is helping Israel carry out a Holocaust against the Palestinians with the full support of the US empire. And by the way, can you guess what was the response of the Trump administration to this report published by the UN detailing the complicity of US corporations in the genocide in Gaza? Drum roll, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, a war criminal who has supported every single US war of aggression, announced that the US government is imposing sanctions on the United Nations human rights expert who did this investigation and published this report. This is the UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights of Palestinians, Francesca Albanese, who is an Italian expert in international human rights law. And she's now under sanctions by the US regime for the supposed crime of detailing how US corporations are profiting from a genocide.
It's obscene, frankly. But right now, I want to remind everyone that the reason why these sanctions have been imposed is the pursuit of justice. Of course, I've been critical of Israel. It has been committing genocide and crimes against humanity and war crimes, and not because I say that. There are criminal proceedings and international Court of Justice proceedings against Israel for these crimes, but also because there are companies who are profiting from it. And excuse me, I mean, I record the offensive and rude posture that has come from some of these companies in reaction to my report.
I mean, this is the level of criminality of the US regime. It's not a normal government. It is a genocidal regime that is sponsoring a genocide in broad daylight Everyone in the world can see it. It's openly admitted in the New York Times. United Nations experts are publishing reports detailing that this is a genocide. And the response of the US government is to send more weapons to speed up the genocide and to impose sanctions on the UN experts who are exposing the genocide. And you really have to admire the bravery of these UN experts like Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur, because she's being threatened directly by the US empire, by the most powerful regime on earth that has a long history of carrying out crimes against humanity and sponsoring genocide. And yet when she heard the news that the US regime had imposed sanctions on her, she lifted her fist in defiance and she said, quote, "The powerful punishing those who speak for the powerless, it is not a sign of strength, but of guilt," end quote. And I think Albanese will go down in history remembered as a hero, as someone who spoke out against this genocide and tried to do everything she could to stop this genocide while the US regime and Wall Street and Silicon Valley and US capitalists and big corporations profited from this Holocaust. And I really need to emphasize that this is not new in history. US corporations also profited from the original Holocaust. US capitalists and US politicians like the Bush family. There are two different US presidents from the Bush dynasty, George Bush Sr., George H.W. Bush Sr., and George W. Bush, his son, both war criminals who both waged war on Iraq and carried out horrific crimes. And the father of George Bush Sr., the grandfather of George W. Bush, Prescott Bush, was himself a wealthy capitalist who also profited from doing business with Hitler, with Nazi Germany, and profited from the original Nazi Holocaust. And I want to read some comments here that were written by Andrew Feinstein, who is a left-wing South African politician who opposed the apartheid regime. And then when apartheid was finally ended in South Africa, he was a member of parliament from the ANC, the African National Congress, which was the anti-apartheid party. And he has been a very outspoken advocate for Palestinian human rights. And he wrote, quote, "It pains me to say this, and I don't do so lightly, as the son of a Holocaust survivor, as someone who has lectured on genocide prevention at Auschwitz, where my mom lost dozens of her family. But Israel is behaving like Nazis. This is not self-defense. This is not to protect Jews. This is Nazism. This is a Holocaust driven by racist white supremacy." And I think it's very accurate to compare Israeli colonialism to fascism, because fascism and colonialism are two sides of the same coin. This was famously articulated by the anti-colonial intellectual Aimé Césaire in his very important book, Discourse on Colonialism. He explained how fascism was colonialism turned inward, that the crimes carried out by the Italian fascist regime under Mussolini and the German Nazi regime under Hitler and the Japanese fascist empire, these were all the crimes committed by the European colonial empires against colonial subjects in Latin America and Africa and Asia. But those crimes were ignored because it was not people in the West, in Europe, who were the actual direct victims of those crimes. But then the fascist regimes turned those crimes inward, those same colonial policies of extermination and genocide. In fact, the Nazis got the idea of the concentration camps from the US colonialists who created concentration camps for Native Americans as they carried out genocide against the indigenous peoples of North America. And the Nazis were also inspired by the racist apartheid system of Jim Crow in the US. They borrowed those ideas and applied them to racial and ethnic minorities inside Germany and other parts of Europe. And the crimes that the Israeli regime is carrying out today, as it's run by an American, Netanyahu, who had US citizenship twice. He was raised and educated in the US. Netanyahu is an American. He's a longtime friend of Trump. These crimes that the Israeli regime is carrying out now, this genocide, these crimes are not new. It's very similar to what the British Empire did, the genocide it carried out in India, in its colonies. to what the French Empire did, its genocidal crimes in Algeria, which was a French colony, or the genocidal crimes of the Belgian Empire in Congo, or getting back to Germany, before the Nazi Holocaust, the German Empire carried out genocide in southern Africa in modern-day Namibia. But almost no one in the West knows about those colonial crimes carried out by the European empires. They only know about the horrific crimes carried out by the fascist regimes, because those fascist regimes used the same colonial practices inside Europe. So this is the true face of the so-called democratic West. When Western imperialist countries bloviate about democracy and human rights and why they have to interfere in the internal sovereign affairs of countries all across the global South and carry out coups and regime change operations and wars and humanitarian interventions, never forget that these Western empires have carried out the worst crimes against humanity and genocide. And all of this rhetoric about democracy and human rights is completely cynical. It's completely hypocritical. These Western regimes have never actually been democratic. They've been the worst violators of democracy. And the fact that they've been supporting Israel's genocide for nearly 2 years in broad daylight, it's not a deviation from the great Western democracies of the past. It's not a perversion. It is exactly what they've been doing for centuries. This is the true face of Western imperialism. And as I conclude here, I must emphasize that it has been completely obvious from the very beginning that Israel has been carrying out genocide. The United Nations created a special committee that said as explicitly as possible that Israel is carrying out genocide with the full support of the US government. And these Western so-called human rights organizations that have often been complicit in US imperialist wars, justifying the US imperialist war on Libya and Syria, justifying imperialist US so-called humanitarian intervention, they're now trying to wash their hands of complicity in these crimes against humanity. And that's why Amnesty International, also in 2024, admitted that Israel is carrying out genocide in Gaza. And that's why now even mainstream US media outlets like the New York Times are finally admitting the truth after nearly 2 years, after 21 months of a live stream genocide we've all seen on social media every single day. Because they can clearly see that in history, students will learn about the US-sponsored, Western-sponsored Israeli genocide against the Palestinian people carried out in 2023, 2024, and 2025 in broad daylight. They will know it will not be controversial that it was genocide. So now these Western institutions are trying to save face desperately, and they're acting as though they were always on the right side of history, but don't let them erase their complicity in these horrific crimes. And never forget how they spent 2 years smearing independent journalists and activists and scholars and advocates like us here and millions of other people around the world who from the very beginning were saying that this is a genocide and that the Palestinian people need to be supported. Supporters of Palestinian human rights were viciously attacked and smeared with nonsensical claims. And now it's clear that advocates for Palestinian human rights were always on the right side of history. And don't let the people who were complicit try to whitewash all of that and erase it.
After listening to Francesca Albanese's powerful United Nations report and Ben Norton's sharp geopolitical analysis, I found myself haunted by a series of questions that demand answers, not just from experts, but from all of us. Questions that cut to the heart of international law, moral responsibility, and the complicity of nations, institutions, and individuals in one of the most visible genocides of our time. We are living through a horrifying paradox, a genocide that is not hidden, whispered, or tucked away in dusty archives. It is streamed in real time, shared across every platform, dissected in headlines, and still allowed to continue. How is it possible that the world watches with open eyes as entire families are erased, as hospitals collapse under missile fire, as children are buried under rubble, and yet global institutions hesitate, diplomats equivocate, and powerful nations refuse to act? Francesca Albanese has laid out in chilling detail what she calls the economy of genocide, a web of corporations profiting from destruction, and states enabling the killing with weapons, intelligence, and diplomatic cover. Ben Norton reveals how the media, after years of downplaying or deflecting, has finally begun to admit that Israel is committing genocide not metaphorically, not symbolically, but in legal and lived reality. And still, silence reigns. This silence isn't passive, it's political. It's engineered. Because acknowledging genocide would mean obligation to sanction, to intervene, to prosecute. To many governments, Palestinian liberation is inconvenient. So they delay, deflect, and deny. So I ask myself, is Israel solely responsible for this genocide, or is the global power structure holding the other end of the rifle? Let's be clear, Israel pulls the trigger. But it's the United States that supplies the bullets. It's the UK, Germany, France, and Italy that lend the political cover, manufacture the tanks, send the surveillance drones, and block accountability at international courts. Israel receives over $3.8 billion annually in U.S. military aid, plus billions more in tech partnerships and diplomatic guarantees. This means that every missile launched, every bomb dropped, every home demolished in Gaza is part of a supply chain that runs through Western capitals. Without these governments, Israel's war machine would sputter. Western complicity goes beyond arms. It lies in United Nations vetoes, media spin, trade agreements, and in silencing human rights advocates. When Germany jails artists and academics for supporting BDS, when France bans Palestinian solidarity protests, when British leaders call student protesters anti-Semitic mobs, they're not just enabling genocide, they're ensuring its normalization. And what of the Arab and Islamic world? What of the leaders who claim to defend Muslim dignity, yet open embassies in Tel Aviv, maintain trade with Israeli companies, and offer nothing but hollow condemnation? This brings me to another painful question. What is the role of Arab and Islamic governments in this genocide? Are they bystanders or collaborators? Many regimes in the Arab world, particularly Egypt, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and even Jordan, have played strategic roles in either directly facilitating Israel's blockade, suppressing pro-Palestinian movements, or normalizing diplomatic ties. Egypt controls the Rafah crossing and has repeatedly denied entry to humanitarian convoys, citing security concerns. The UAE and Bahrain signed the Abraham Accords, deepening economic ties with Israel even as bombs fell on Gaza. Some say these governments are following Western instructions, keeping silent to protect their interests, foreign aid, or regime stability. Others argue they are protecting Israel deliberately, fearing that a free and democratic Palestine would inspire revolutionary movements at home. Whatever the reason, their silence is not neutral. It has consequences. Every closed border, every censored protest, every surveillance of activists inside Arab states is part of the machinery that lets genocide proceed without disruption. Yet, this is not a blanket condemnation of the peoples of these nations. From Tunis to Beirut, Istanbul to Jakarta, Amman to Rabat, ordinary people have flooded the streets in solidarity, defying bans and brutality to demand justice for Palestine. The masses are awake, even if their rulers are afraid. So where do we go from here? Knowing the scale of complicity from arms dealers to Western governments, from tech firms to Arab regimes, we must ask not only how this genocide continues, but how we resist it. This starts with truth-telling, with naming names, with boycotts, divestment, sanctions, and the refusal to normalize apartheid. It means leveraging platforms, mobilizing institutions, and turning our pain into pressure, because silence is complicity. And complicity is power. But resistance, too, is power. And it belongs to those who refuse to look away. You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio. I want to take a moment to highlight two urgent calls to action that demands our attention. Every Tuesday, from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m., community members gather for the standout to stop the killing outside the Zionist consulate at 20 Park Plaza in Boston. This is more than a protest, it's a stand for humanity, for accountability, and for the lives being lost in silence. The second call to action is Support Palestinian Liberation Stop Gaza Starvation on Thursday, July 24th from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Salem Farmers Market. Meet at 21 Front Street, Salem, Massachusetts. Your presence matters. Show up. Speak out. Stand for justice.
Everything was quiet, then came the sound. My teddy bear fell as I looked around. Where did Mama go? She was just right here. And Papa's voice I strained here. So dark in here. Where did all the light go? Can anyone hear me? I just wanna know. La la la. Oh. Strange faces gather, they're taking me. My small voice trembles, I beg them to stay. Please find my sister, she's just a baby still. But no one answers, and no one will. Sister, please. Why is it so dark?
Up today's episode of This Week in Palestine. Stay curious, stay courageous, and keep questioning the narratives that silence truth. Until next time, I'm your host, Muhammad Al-Ghul, and it's been a privilege to share this space with you. If you'd like to send us your thoughts, ask a question, or support our work, drop us a line at twippodcasts@gmail.com. We genuinely welcome your voice. A deep and heartfelt thank you to our listeners and to the brilliant team behind this show, Bob Funk, Stanley Robinson, Stephen Lowe, Sophia Rose Woolman, Tahani Abu Moza, Dr. Rana Awad, Dr. Bethany Marks, Juliet Salama Holovier, and Renaud Alkoud. Your passion fuels every broadcast. This Week in Palestine is brought to you by Truth and Justice Radio, broadcasting with purpose from WZBC Student Radio at Boston College. Thank you for walking with us on this journey toward liberation. Until next week, stay bold.
everything was quiet, then came the sound. My teddy bear fell as I looked around. Where did Mama go? She was just right here. And Papa's voice I strained to hear. So dark in here. Where did all the light go? Can anyone hear me? I just wanna know. La la la. Oh. Strange faces gather. They're taking me.